We know the Chicago Bears have talent deficiencies on the roster, but the loss to the New York Giants was more on the coaching staff than the players themselves.
You are Locked On Bears, your daily Chicago Bears podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
This is Locked On Bears, and I'm your host, Lauren Cox. I'm here to bring you your daily, in-depth Chicago Bears news and analysis. You can follow me on Twitter at CoxSports1. You can follow the podcast on Twitter at Locked On Bears. You can like Locked On Bears on Facebook. Join the Locked On Bears Facebook group for even more Bears talk. And make sure you hit that subscribe button on the Locked On Bears YouTube channel to keep up with all of our video podcasts as well. Thanks for making Locked On Bears your first listen today. Today's episode of Locked On Bears is presented by Prize Picks. Prize Picks is daily fantasy made easy. Pick 2 to 5 players, and if they score more or less than their Prize Picks projection, you can win up to 10 times your money on your entry. First-time users can receive a 100% deposit match bonus up to $100 with our promo code LOCKEDON. That's prizepicks.com, promo code LOCKEDON. On the show today, we get into this Bears loss to the Giants and why conservative coaching decisions were most harmful to this Bears team, and that it felt more like the coaching staff was hurting its players more than it was helping its players in key situations. We'll look then at what this Bears defense was and wasn't able to do against Daniel Jones and Saquon Barkley, some of the good and the bad on that side of the ball. And then we'll wrap up with a look at Justin Fields and why this game, while certainly it wasn't great, did feel like there was progress for the young quarterback. Not that everything is fixed or solved, but steps, even if small steps, in the right direction. And that's something positive we can take away from this game. But it was concerning that it really felt like coaching and the decisions they made in some of these key situations were a problem. And we've seen it through the first 3 games of the season, and we've talked about in this podcast before that the conservative play calling and decision-making is only a problem when it doesn't work, right? When you're still able to win the football games, all right, it's not a problem at that point because you're able to still hold on for the victories and finish out on top. But as soon as it stops working, then it's a problem. And we saw that really manifest against the Giants here. There were a few different situations that hurt the Bears. Like, it's Matt Eberflus talks after the game about how, you know, the first 4 scoring drives were all field goal drives, and how he's like, we need to convert those 3s into 7s. And it's like, coach, you know how you convert those 3s into 7s? You go for it on 4th and 2 from the 4 instead of settling for the field goal. Or, coach, you don't call a tight end screen on 3rd and 15 in field goal range. It's these individual decisions that the team is making. And I don't think it's easy to just say offensive coordinator Luke Getsy, because Eberflus is intimately involved in these decisions. He's not picking the play per se, but he is talking with his offensive coordinator about, okay, are we going to go for it here? Are we not? How are we going to handle these types of situations? Including talking to him on game day during the game leading up to these situations. He's not going to him and saying, hey, call the tight end screen here necessarily, but he is talking about, you know, what type of opportunities they want to take and don't want to take. And a few of those moments throughout this game really stood out. I mean, one was, you know, they had 3rd and 3 at the 5. I think it was either the first or the 2nd quarter. It was still pretty early in the game. You're down 7-3, but you're in the red zone. They handed off on 3rd and 3. Okay. I sort of understand that when you're inside the 5, because, you know, if you get 4th and short, you could go for it again. So you're okay to hand it off there because the running game had been working to some extent pretty well. And they ran the ball overall, not badly, you know, fairly consistently in this game. But, you know, your 3rd and 3 handoff gets you 1. Okay, not great. But 4th and 2 from the 4, all right, great. You can go for it. But instead, they settle for the field goal instead and go from 7-3 to down 7-6. And that difference in the deficit doesn't really move the needle on that much. And that's on the drive that Justin Fields hit the 50-yard bomb to Darnell Mooney. So it's like your offense all of a sudden, it has opened up vertically. It's clicking. Fields is hitting his receivers, right? The running game's working a little bit. You're moving the ball as effectively as you have on a drive this season. And yet you get to 3rd and 3 on the 5, you hand off, and then 4th and 2 on the 4, and you take the field goal. I get that it's early in the game, and if that were the only moment of conservative coaching, okay, you can live with that on its own in a vacuum. But you get later in the game, you know, at the 2-minute drive, right, they have the false start, and they get the 3rd and 15, and they throw the screen to Cole Kmet. The tight end screen on 3rd and 15 just doesn't stand a chance. Like, I'll give them credit that, you know, they had a 3rd and 20 that they threw a screen to Khalil Herbert, and he had a Herculean effort to pick it up. But just because it worked doesn't mean it was the right idea, right? It had good results, but maybe not a good process there. And we saw why that process was so flawed on a tight end screen to Cole Kmet, who just, there's no way Cole Kmet is going to pick up 15 yards on a tight end screen on 3rd and 15. And that was after the Giants had the fumble on the punt return that extended the drive for the Bears, and you're down 8, mind you. And so, like, I understand that, like, they didn't leave points on the board necessarily there, that there's no guarantee they convert that 3rd and 15 throwing downfield. But a tight end screen is not the play call that puts your offense in the best position to pick up that first down. And that's the thing Luke Getsy keeps saying. It's like, we're doing whatever the best thing for our offense to win football games. And that's total BS if you think a tight end screen to Cole Kmet on 3rd and 15 is putting your offense in the best position. It just is not the case. Or you get into the fourth quarter. Both Giants quarterbacks are injured. So Daniel Jones is back out there on a bum ankle, unable to throw the ball. They're only running and only handing it off. And you get to 4th and 2 on your own 45 with 3 minutes to go, down 8. And the Bears punt it to pin the Giants back. And yes, it did pin the Giants back. And they did force a 3-and-out. It, quote-unquote, worked, but it made it more difficult for your team, right? He said that was a good decision that they're happy with because it worked, but it's not the smart decision for, it's not the optimal decision for your football team. Again, the results in that moment were okay, but it wasn't the good process. It doesn't take a genius. It's like, it's basic analytics 101. You don't have to understand how analytics work to understand that there are certain times you go for it and you don't go for it in situations, and that the analytics do also account for the situations. And it's like, it's willful ignorance of available information on what is the best thing for your football team to do, and the team either choosing not to know it or choosing not to follow it. They have analytics people in the front office, but something is disconnected there with the coaching staff. I think the front office analytics people are helping drive personnel decisions, they're not having enough sway on these in-game decisions because it's very basic stuff. You have the ball. I know it's your own 45 and you had timeouts left, but go for it on 4th and 2. Their offense can only run the ball. So if you trust your defense to stop them and get a 3-and-out after the punt, then why do you not trust your defense to stop them if you don't get the 4th down conversion? So what you end up doing is you punt it back to them. You stop them and they punt it back to you, and you're back to where you were when you punted. Like, you didn't gain anything. You just killed more time and wasted your timeouts on the clock. And it's like, I understand a hesitancy to maybe fully trust this Bears offense, but we're talking about 4th and 2. We're not talking about 4th and 15 or 4th and 10. 4th and 2. Can you not get 2 yards? You could even run the ball. I wouldn't want you to, but you could pick that up running the ball. You know how much they like running the ball in those situations. So it's just, it's incredibly frustrating when it feels like the coaching staff isn't giving their players the best chance to win, the opportunities to win. You know, if you go for it on 4th and 2 in the first quarter there and don't get it, and you go for it on 4th and 2 in the fourth quarter there and don't get it, at least you can say, okay, you know what? Our players weren't good enough in this game. And generally speaking, the players aren't always good enough, but the coaching staff didn't even give them the chance in those moments. The coaching staff made the conservative decisions that held those players back from even having a chance to put this team over the top and have a chance to score. And those decisions from the coaching staff hurt them more than they helped them. And that continues to be a problem here when it does not result in a win. When they're able to do it and still win against the Texans and the 49ers, that's fine. But you lose a potential winnable game against a team that doesn't have a quarterback in the fourth quarter and you still lose the New York Giants. That's incredibly frustrating. And it doesn't sound like initially Eberflus is ready to point the fingers at themselves yet. Maybe after they review the All-22, they'll change their mind like he did at the halftime decisions there, but it's rough and it's frustrating. And I feel you, Bears fans, on how you must feel after a game like that. But we're not gonna be too, you know, bearing down on all the negatives here. I want to get into what this Bears defense was and wasn't able to do, and then wrap up with some of the progress we saw from Justin Fields next on Locked On Bears. This episode of Locked On Bears is brought to you by our friends at Prize Picks. Prize Picks makes daily fantasy even better because you're not playing against other people. It's you versus the house. So you're in complete control. You pick 2 to 5 players and you pick whether they'll go above or below their Prize Picks projections, and you can win up to 10 times your money on any entry. It's super fast and easy. It really takes 60 seconds or less. And when you're ready to withdraw, it's safe and fast withdrawals as well. It's currently operational in over 30 states and Canada. It's a lot of fun, and it makes your Sundays that much more exciting. Download the Prize Picks app or go to prizepicks.com to sign up and play daily fantasy sports. First-time users can receive a 100% instant deposit match up to $100 when you enter in our promo code LOCKEDON. If you deposit $100, PrizePicks will give you $100. You deposit $50, PrizePicks give you $50. Pretty easy. Don't forget to enter that promo code LOCKEDON at sign-up for that instant deposit match up to $100. There was a lot of rough from this Bears defense in the first half, right? Unable to figure out how to stop the Daniel Jones and Saquon Barkley rushing game. But it did feel like they turned a corner a bit there in the second half and continued their streak of no touchdowns allowed in the second half so far. Field goal in the third quarter, field goal in the fourth quarter. That's a second half winning defensive performance. You can win a lot of football games when your defense holds a team to a field goal a quarter, especially in the second half. First half was a bit of a problem. And I, you know, give them credit for making the halftime adjustments, but it's a little concerning that they weren't prepared for that in the first half. Like, what did you expect? Maybe none of us expected Daniel Jones to run that much, but there's no surprise that Daniel Jones is a mobile quarterback who has had a lot of rushing success this season. There's no surprise Saquon Barkley is having a really good bounce back season. And there's no surprise that the Giants wide receivers are not very good and that they would need to do different things offensively to get things moving. Like, we talked about it on our Crossover Thursday podcast with Patricia Traina, and on Friday on our Game Plan podcast, that the Giants are going to run the ball and they're going to run it as much as they can. And that, like we said on that podcast, if you want to win this game, dare Daniel Jones to beat you with his arm. And I don't really feel like Daniel Jones beat the Bears with his arm in this game. Not to say that he didn't have some key completions, you know, at times, but I mean, he finished 8 of 13 for 71 yards, and Tyrod Taylor had one completion for 11 yards in there too. So, like, collectively, the Giants passed for 82 yards. They did not beat you with their arms. They beat you with the 262 yards on the ground. Of course, Saquon Barkley had 146, which was, honestly, it was still below his yards per carry average. I'm not painting that as a victory for the Bears defense, but, you know, it was a troublesome, right? The Bears' defensive line was losing at the line of scrimmage there. Giants' offense seemed to get a lot of push up front. There were times when they had stops on Barkley, and there were times when it was a little bit too easy for him. Certainly in the first half, the missed tackles were a real problem. I mean, Nick Morrow, my goodness, he's been rough all season, but this was, I think I counted at least 3 missed tackles in the first half alone. Seemed like it got a little better in the second half, but boy, was that rough. And then, of course, just no one accounting for Daniel Jones on the bootleg, and like how they couldn't just adjust to that on the fly. Like, after the first drive, when Daniel Jones bootlegs a couple times and rushes in for the end zone, your defensive staff should be on the sideline saying, okay, we need to make sure that doesn't happen again. And they let it happen like 5 more times, and it wasn't until halftime that they figured out how to stop it. Like, you can make adjustments on the sidelines, and it didn't feel like they did that until they got into half. So I give them credit for the halftime adjustments, but also feel like at least that one should have been adjusted to sooner and should have been more expected entering the game. Like, you just sort of should have known that that was coming. We could have predicted that was coming. Now, the other thing was the difficulty with play action and your linebackers and to some extent your safety, Jaquan Brisker. It was really those groups were just biting so hard on every play action. We've seen it all season long, but it was especially egregious in this game because they were so focused on stopping Barkley. And to some extent, I can live with it a little bit if you were stopping Barkley, right? If you had shut down Saquon Barkley because you were biting on every run play, and as a result, biting on some play action. I could live with it if it was working to stop the run, but it also wasn't quite working to stop the run either. So that's a problem, and they're going to need to keep working on that. It was Roquan, it was Nick Morrow, and it was Jaquan Brisker were all the three biggest culprits on biting on that over and over again. I did think Eddie Jackson, another really strong game from him. He is back to Eddie Jackson level form, a nice interception deep downfield. And this is actually the first game in his career that he has gotten an interception and the Bears have lost. I think they said they were like 6-0 in games that Eddie Jackson had interceptions in up to this point. I don't remember the exact number, but they were undefeated. This is the first time they've ever lost in a game in which Eddie Jackson had an interception. He also had 9 tackles. That's the second most on the team. And that's always a red flag for a defense when your free safety is second on the team in tackles and one fewer than Roquan Smith. That's telling you that the ball carrier is getting to the third level far, far too consistently. Also disappointed, the Bears as a defense had 1 sack on Daniel Jones after he had been sacked 13 times in the first 3 games. And that sack came on a blitz by Jaquan Brisker. So like it took a blitz to be able to bring him down. And other defensive lines have seemed to have more success pass rushing against this Giants offensive line. And the Bears front 7 really struggled to get good pass rush. And then, of course, the Giants moving the line of scrimmage in the ground game. It was not pretty at times for the defense. Now, at the same time, you held the Giants to 20 total points. And not that you should win 100% of the time that you only give up 20 points, but like usually 20 is not a terrible overall defensive performance. Not great, but not terrible overall. You just, in a normal situation, you kind of expect your offense to score more. Certainly expect them to score more than 12 and usually hope for more than 20. Like 17 at a minimum should be what you expect your offense to score every single game. And that's like on the really low end of the spectrum. And so 20 is passable, perhaps, defense. But the Bears just couldn't get passable offense in some parts because their conservative coaching decisions and play calling had them settling for field goals and just not putting this team in the best position to be successful like we talked about. But it was still moments of progress from Justin Fields that we can take away from this game feeling like, okay, maybe it's baby steps. We can argue on how much progress or how big of a step forward, but it is forward. That's the key direction after it felt like last week he was going backwards. So we'll look at some of the things Justin Fields did well and where we still need to see more improvement next on Locked On Bears. The Locked On Bears podcast is powered by our friends at Built Bar, the makers of the world's best tasting protein bars ever. If you haven't tried them yet, you're missing out on one of the great joys for me because it's like a no-guilt sweet treat. Because all Built Bars, whether they're Built Bars, Built Puffs, or they have Built Granola Bars now that are really good, they're all low sugar and low calories, but loaded up with protein and fiber, and they taste like candy bars. They're the chewy, covered in 100% real chocolate. I mean, it gives you that candy bar taste and experience, but it's like good for you and like helps you feel more full with the protein. I mean, it's really the best of both worlds, and you have to taste it to believe it. Head on over to built.com and enter in our promo code LOCKEDON15 and get 15% off your next order. You can reuse that code multiple times too on separate orders. That's LOCKEDON15, LOCKEDON15 at built.com. The Bears seem to build some progress for Justin Fields in this game. Easy to circle the deep bomb to Darnell Mooney. It was the Bears' longest pass of the game, and it's certainly the longest pass of the season in the air. The Dante Pettis pass, I think, in week 1, traveled the yardage total, I think, ended up being higher. But, of course, this was like purely through the air. Almost all 56 of the yards were air yards on that play, and it was like the most vertical this Bears offense had been, you know, on that play. And it was really nice to see Fields have the time, the confidence, the accuracy, and it was a great catch by Darnell Mooney. I do think it was intentional to lead him a little bit to the outside, so it made the catch look a little bit more difficult because Mooney kind of started falling down earlier than he needed to. I don't know if that was intentional or not, but regardless, it worked, and it looked good, and it felt like, okay, there it is. There's some proof of concept. Mooney still has it. Fields still has it. It's still there. We just have to find ways to get more of that out of both of them. And, you know, there were other moments of Fields being able to hit some nice passes, going through progressions, you know, over the middle, hit Mooney a couple of times there, really got him going in a way that we haven't seen consistently enough this season. I think Mooney finished with around like, I want to say it was like four catches for a little short of 100 yards there. It definitely didn't cross the 100-yard mark, but it was progress in that front that felt good, that those guys were more on the same page in this offense. There's also that back shoulder throw to Dante Pettis where Pettis got hands on it. I mean, it was really good coverage to break up the pass. Like, I'll give the cornerback credit there, but like, I thought it was, in terms of back shoulder throws, pretty much where you want to put the ball. And there were a couple of those, like he got one to EQ Equanimeous St. Brown as well, that I think were decent balls that end up being a little bit more 50-50 ball, and it's up to the wide receiver to make the play, but the quarterback puts it in a spot where his receiver has a shot at it, and they weren't able to come down with it, but I still think, you know, those were good balls from Justin Fields. Still missed a couple of the layup throws. You know, there was one where he's rolling out of the pocket and tried to flip to the running back and just overshot him in a way that's like, why? You know, like, how do you... Like, Fields still sometimes makes the easy things look difficult, but is making the difficult things look easy as well. I mean, some of the ways he scrambled in this game were phenomenal. But, like, I saw him... moments of progress in his pocket presence as well. And I'm eager to get into the All-22 film on tomorrow's podcast to see it, be able to slow it down and see it at a wider angle too. But there was a play in particular. It was a third down in the red zone. I don't remember what quarter it was off the top of my head. And I'm trying to scroll through my notes and see if I definitely marked that play, but I'll see if I can quickly tell what quarter it was. But regardless, it's like, it's third down in the red zone and he's standing in the pocket, and there's some pressure coming from the right side. It was the throw that he threw it to Dante Pettis in the back left corner of the end zone. And it was a little bit high and sort of leading him out of bounds and incomplete. But it was a play where pressure was coming from the right side. And, yeah, this was actually in the first quarter, it looks like. Pressure's coming from Fields' right. And he, instead of feeling the pressure, tucking the ball, dropping and scrambling like he has been doing for the first three games and did a lot through this game, he kept his eyes downfield, and he did one of these, like, he drifted away from the pressure just because he knew the route was opening up and he was getting ready to throw. And it felt like the Fields we saw last week and in earlier games, as soon as he feels that pressure, right, he's going into full scramble mode. He's flipping his body and rolling left, and maybe he might still decide to throw the ball at some point, but he's essentially giving up on whatever he was looking at that moment. But this time he held onto it just enough to be able to fire a pass in there. Pettis didn't end up getting very open, and maybe the pass was a little bit inaccurate, but it felt like progress in that he knew he could tell the difference between pressure that I gotta go and pressure that I can hold on just a little bit longer because I know my line will give me a little bit of time and I know this route is about to open up. And there's this fine line that he's trying to work through, right, between holding the ball too long, which there were plays in this one where he took sacks that he shouldn't have because he held the ball too long, and also being too quick to scramble. There were also plays in this one where he left the pocket too soon. There wasn't real pressure. He just thought there was going to be pressure, so he took off scrambling. But really, the pocket held up, and he could have stayed in there longer, right? He hasn't fixed the problem. But that play in the red zone, and I think there were a couple others, looked like progress to me in that he's finding that sweet spot a little bit more. Like in the last week against the Texans, it felt like he never found that sweet spot. He was always too early or too late. But in this one, there were a couple of those plays where he's like, okay, I can see this through and just need to drift a little bit with my eyes downfield to create that extra half second to deliver this ball. And I don't care that it wasn't caught or wasn't completed. It was progress in pocket presence. And we need to see more of that from Justin Fields. And I was glad we saw signs of it and say, hey, okay, he is gaining progress. Because it's hard to gain progress when you're sacked six times. And I thought the offensive line took a step back in pass protection in this game, and receivers took a step back in ability to catch some of these passes and get open consistently. All 22 will tell us more about how the receivers did, but especially the offensive line, this was bad. I mean, I thought the offensive line had played a lot better against Green Bay and against Houston, and that in those games it was a little bit more on Fields in terms of the pressure and the sacks he was feeling in that game. In those games, in this one, there were a lot of plays where Lucas Patrick got beat very quickly, where Sam Mustafer got beat very quickly, and at times Larry Borum and Braxton Jones got beat quickly. Again, all 22 will tell us a little bit more, but this was bad offensive line play against a team that only had, I think, three sacks in three games coming into this one. This is not a good pass rush over in terms of production that they were facing in this one. I think they do have some talent that had been underachieving, but they really achieved against this Bears offensive line, and that was a concern. And this one felt more like offensive line is holding Fields and this Bears offense back in pass protection. They were run blocking fairly well, but pass protection was back to being a very, very real problem that we're concerned about, especially with Cody Whitehair's knee injury. You know, nothing official at the time I'm recording this, but he was ruled out for the game, which probably is not good news there. And Lucas Patrick was particularly bad at left guard, and Sam Mustafa was particularly bad at center. So this is going to continue to be a concern, but in spite of that, Fields still made pocket presence progress. Say that five times fast, and I'm glad to see it. So we'll certainly see what else we can glean from the All-22 film on tomorrow's podcast. Make sure you come back, give us a listen for that. Hit that subscribe button, whether you're watching on the Locked On Bears YouTube channel or listening in your favorite podcast app. That's going to be the best way to keep up with all of our daily, in-depth Chicago Bears news and analysis. Thanks for making the Locked On Bears podcast your first listen each and every day. If you're looking for your second listen, Locked On Podcast Network has Chicago sports covered for you. Your team every day. Locked On Bulls, Locked On Cubs, Locked On White Sox, Locked On Northwestern, Locked On Illini, Locked On Chicago Blackhawks. I always feel like I'm forgetting them, but hey, we've got Chicago sports covered. You can find them all at lockedonsports.com if you're just looking for the full list there, or searching your podcast feed or on YouTube for the Locked On Chicago sports team of your choice. Come on back tomorrow for another episode of Locked On Bears and another opportunity for you to bear down.